Hello and welcome back to the Cine Club podcast. I'm your new host, Ben, and I'm joined by podcast regulars
Billy,
Matthew,
and Reese.
Today we're moseying on down to the Wild West to talk all things westerns, from the classics to the modern. Let's start with the era of John Ford, Gary Cooper, and John Wayne. What do you guys think of these films?
Ooh, well, I'm not very well versed in this topic of westerns in this era. The classic ones, mostly black and white ones, that kind of era.
Yeah.
Only one I can really remember seeing is My Darling Clementine.
And what a banger. What a banger.
It was not. It was not. What? I've got to say, it was not a banger.
What are you talking about?
It was not a banger.
It's just wrong.
I didn't like it. It was, maybe it's because I am more into the later westerns that are more action-packed.
Right.
But it was very, very anticlimactic, and it had these like grand characters. Partly because I felt like it was built up quite a lot to be like the best western of all time, and like fundamental to the genre.
I'd like never heard anyone really talking about.
Oh, we're talking about it.
You've heard of the song, but like,
yeah,
not as much. But like, I just thought it was really good because Henry Fonda's brilliant in it.
Yeah,
and like the direction by John Ford is just like tremendous. It just looks so good in the black and white. It's crazy.
Yeah, I admit it looks good, but.
Yeah.
Again, like plot-wise and action-wise, it's very
like
meandering.
Cool. It's got one of the coolest scenes I've ever seen in the film. You know, when he meets Doc Holliday for the first time, and Doc's about to like shoot him, and I think one of his brothers like slides the gun across the bar.
Yeah, that's cool. But it like never really leads anywhere. I think
there's a massive shootout. Are you talking about?
Oh yeah, at the very end of the film, right?
About 15 people get their heads blown off. Dude, it doesn't lead anywhere.
Like the major action I just remember being at the very end of the film. Maybe it's because, as the western goes on, the sanctity of life gets less and less valued, and people just end up dying left and right. But it felt very like tame, you know.
I suppose I see what you mean, but to me, it's not like. To me, westerns aren't meant to be action packed. Like one we'll get onto later, which is the same story, Tombstone. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't really call that action packed, apart from like sparse moments. It's more like the characters and the experience of living in the Wild West that the stories focus on, and that's what My Darling Clementine was. It was Wyatt Earp trying to preserve law and order against like insurmountable odds. It worked really well. I really like it.
There's some parts of My Darling Clementine that I prefer over Tombstone. I have to go back and rewatch it. Like, I think I prefer the sort of dynamic between Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday a bit more in My Darling Clementine.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more tense, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because who plays Doc Holliday in that?
I can't remember.
Oh, God.
He's just cool, though.
Whenever you mention Doc Holliday, like, any other iteration's completely outshone
by Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer's the better Doc Holliday. Absolutely.
But yeah, John Ford ones as well. I've seen Wagon Master. That was pretty good. It's another similar one where it's not massively action-packed. It's cool. It's full of like just great performances and gorgeous cinematography, and that I feel like that characterizes a lot of the classic westerns, where you've got the traditional hero archetypes, you've got just great black and white cinematography, like big wide shots of the American West, and like I can see why people aren't as keen on that, but I quite like it.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the exceptions that I've got is The High Noon, because that's quite a tense character study. With Gary Cooper, that's really good. I think everyone sort of knows the general gist of it.
Yeah.
Like, he's been challenged out to a duel and he's trying to rally support, but nobody wants to give him the time of day, and he's left to sort of fend for his own. That's really good. That's a great example of a classic western. If you don't like the sort of the slower pace of other ones, because that's it's really tense and it keeps you engaged the whole time.
Yeah.
I think part of my like distaste for the ones I've seen is because of my like viewpoint of westerns, how they've been like kind of stereotyped in like post-50s as more tense and more stylistic and action-y, you know, and these ones seem to fit like more in line with the general like filmmaking of the 50s than they do with their own genre, because it was just starting out as a genre really.
Okay.
And like really getting built up. Like, they had to establish the tropes first, and then they get built upon in later iterations of it.
Yeah.
See, I would disagree, because the reason that the later westerns are so much more tense and action-packed is because they were trying to reinvent what the classic formula was for a newer generation. So, like, it's the expectations around, I don't know, the spaghetti westerns or anything past the, I would say, probably 70s, going on into 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, I feel like that's why you've got those expectations, because what we're so used to now in the Western is a reinvention of what the Western used to be.
Yeah. And now we're seeing, when we go back and see what the Western used to be, it has a strange effect because we're so used to seeing reinventions of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Ben? What do you think? Classic ones?
I've seen a few of the John Wayne ones.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he's in The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Yeah, that's meant to be really good.
Yeah, with Jimmy Stewart. I really enjoy that one.
I've been meaning to watch it for ages. It's meant to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great, because it basically works against lots of the tropes, because Jimmy Stewart's the really mild-mannered guy who's trying not to turn into the peacekeeper who has to shoot the bad guy.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's like an early example of that archetype building up, I suppose, because you see that a lot of like people, well, Wyatt Earp especially, like want in their tombstone wanting to commit to be a lawmaker or not. Like it's that that jump between being a law-abiding civilian and then taking the law into your own hands and, like, you know, taking people's lives.
Yeah.
It's, well, and John Wayne as well is in a lot of these early westerns. What do you think makes him such a, like, star of the era?
I don't know. I'm not too sure. I mean, I can't really.
I'm not as familiar with him, but you've just watched the original True Grit, haven't you? 'Cause from what I surmise, the reason that John Wayne has carried on for so long is because he was a different, kind of a different archetype to what most western stars were. He brought that, pardon the pun, grit to it, and like sort of was the one who began to push towards like maybe an anti-hero archetype, maybe like a bit more morally grey.
Yeah.
I'm basing that purely off because I've seen the remake of True Grit, and his character of like Rooster Cogburn in that is like a bit more morally grey. He's not really a good guy, so I'm assuming he's like that in the originals. Maybe not.
He is, and I think True Grit, the original one's like later in the 60s era, but still feels like this like early vibe. And John Wayne himself, he is, you're right, he's like very like gritty and very like grimy as a character and like as an archetype. Compare him to like Henry Fonda in My Darling Clementine, who's like smooth talking, you can understand everything he's saying. He's like a law-abiding man, he just wants to do good. John Wayne often like, he's very intimidating physically, and his like the words, the like scripting to say, and like his dialogue's often more like filled with slang and like colloquialisms, terms. He's often like the person people will go to for help when they don't have anyone else left. He's that kind of like reluctant hero that like the Western has like been so reliant on since.
Yeah. So he's like he's the I don't know what would be a good phrase to. He's like the benchmark that all the others have been trying to
essentially
reach.
Yeah. Like he's the, on the scale of like hero to villain, like he's right in the middle as like a kind of anti-hero, and everyone else builds their personas around him, I think.
Yeah, so kind of like what Eastwood would go on to sort of, to that build his star persona around.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a good transition point there.
And what I think is probably my favourite era, the whole, the era in this like 60s and 70s. We start seeing more use of special effects and just fun. It gets a bit more zany at times. It gets a bit more like exaggerated, the violence. Yeah. The characters as well get more cartoonish. We can't like address this either without talking about Clint Eastwood, obviously.
Yeah.
What are your favourite Eastwoods?
You know, you can't go wrong with Good, the Bad and the Ugly. We saw it on 35mm, and that was like unbelievable. But like from this era, I think a couple of his underrated performances, I quite like The Outlaw Josie Wales.
I love Josie Wales, yes.
That is a really good film. What was the other one? That's the thing. I'm struggling here because there's that many.
Would you count,
to go through?
Because I've seen a couple of people say, like, I don't know what your theory is, I don't know what you think about this. I've seen people say Dirty Harry.
Dirty Harry
is something of a Western.
I would say it's on the cusp of a Western.
Yeah,
it's Dirty the same Harry's way, like, I would consider No Country for Old Men to be a Western. It's, like, on the cusp of it, because I would like, coin it as an urban Western, because it's not in the Wild West, it's in a city, but he still embodies the characters that you would see in a Western.
Yeah, like, he's still the like rogue cop on the edge of the law who's like just pushed limits every time to get the job done. And
totally.
What's the villain called again? In that, he's very much still an outlaw. He's just, like, sniping people committing, like, bad deeds, and...
Well, even, like, Harry Callahan, does he not become, like, I've not seen it for, like, about a year. Mm-hmm. Do you not, like, does it not tell him, oh, you're suspended, and he's still...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which sort of...
It's that, like, self-reliant Americanism that really works for the West, and that's, it's like...
A bit like John Wayne, what you were just saying.
A bit like John Wayne, yeah, how he's, like, this, like, self-reliant man who just doesn't need anyone at all, and... That's part of what makes the Western such, like, a prominent genre in American film, because it just, like, mythologizes, like, the kind of birth of the American spirit and,
yeah, totally.
Like, how America is born, how it is the way it is. Like, this great story of the pioneers and the people who went west. Obviously, there's lots of, like, historical things that do get touched on later, I think. Outlaw Josie Wales does a decent-ish job of that. I know the writer of the book was a... actual, like, neo-Confederate. Yeah, that's a long story for another day, but that it's, you do see the Native Americans a lot in that. There's different, like, aspects on the, although Josie does not, like, treat them very well. You see different aspects of life. In the Civil War, some that always address.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I find it very interesting how Josie Wales is supposed to be, like, a sympathetic character, despite being
a Confederate
like raider, you know, like he is probably not a very nice man.
Yeah.
But it paints the Union the same as the Confederacy, that one, which is what makes it such like a weird outlier.
Okay.
Because
I think that speaks to the 70s and 80s era of Westerns as a whole, because like you had a lot more like morally ambiguous like heroes in quotation marks in it. Like you had Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Once Upon a Time in the West is a really good one as well.
Oh,
Sergio
yeah.
Leone before the Dollars trilogy.
Oh,
and you've got Henry Fonda in it, but he's playing like as different of a Western character as you could possibly get from the likes of Wyatt Earp. He's not a very nice man in it.
See, I can't imagine Henry Fonda playing someone who's like evil.
No, yeah. He's too like clean cut, isn't he?
Henry Fonda. Even when he was in New York, he was lovely then, wasn't he?
Well, that's exactly why I feel like it works so well, because it's not what you expect
sort of
from
throws you off.
And that was like right on the cusp of going from what's it called to like the classic era to the modern era.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really interesting one. But you also had like the emergence of people starting to take the mick out of Westerns, which led to the genre's decline through the 80s. So you had Blazing Saddles in the 70s, Mel Brooks. Yeah. That was a great one. And then once you got into the 80s, you've got stuff like Three Amigos with Steve Martin, Martin Short and Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And like you do start to get that decline, because I suppose it's not just the oversaturation of it, it's because they become a bit of a parody of themselves.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. They definitely lean into the melodrama at points with how archetype, I don't know how to say the word.
But like the archetypes of the characters, like Clint Eastwood, so you can say he like plays the same character in most of his films. And also John Wayne, he is in, I just looked on there on Letterboxd, 250 films. That is a massive amount of films, and he was probably doing the same thing for most of them. It's like it's such a formulaic like genre if you're not trying.
Yeah,
and I think that's probably why people got sick of it. And like when you see so many, it like becomes ingrained in your brain that you've got to start like taking the mick out of it.
Well, the same sort of thing happens to Eastwood, because he's like playing basically the exact same character in most films. He's like a man of few words, a man who like doesn't have many moral scruples, and like that just he keeps going on and on in that until you sort of get to a few of the later ones where he's stepping into the director's chair and he's switching things up a little bit.
That's the thing. I think he would have become like just a complete. I think it would have become like sort of the Clint Eastwood parodies of he's like you're saying he's the same in every film.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that would have kept going if he hadn't sort of directing films and starring other films like The Mule, Million Dollar Baby, and Gran Torino.
Yeah,
I feel like they sort of like they're. At least to me,
they feel like Westerns.
They feel like Westerns, but at the same time, they're different enough. So Clint Eastwood isn't just
Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, isn't just Clint Eastwood.
Like, this aspect of them, there. I did my essay on this last year about how his star persona evolved, and I saw it as like I say, he plays the same character in every film, and I like to see it as for a long time fan or like a dedicated fan of Clint Eastwood. You get to see his star persona evolve and tell a different story, because in his early roles, he's very, very. Like, he's a hugely violent person. If you want to do a kill count on Clint Eastwood's films, you can. It's probably in the thousands. but, and then he does films like, I think it was called Midway, which is one where he stars this like grizzled army veteran in World War II, and it really starts to explore like the psyche of soldiers and killers and how they feel. And then, what is his like major turnaround in the westerns? It's the one where he's basically telling everyone, "Don't kill people, guys. Yeah, don't do
that." Is that not Unforgiven?
Unforgiven. That's it.
Yeah, Unforgiven. That's the sort of that was what the sort of marker I feel for like the transition into what you would consider to be the modern western.
Yeah,
because like he is like a just an awful, but he's not a very nice person in that either. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was sort of what I would consider the jumping off point from that 70s and 80s spaghetti western to what we know westerns as today. Because after that, you had Tombstone, The Quick and the Dead, so on and so forth.
The like kind of like introspection is really important to the change and how it's still like surviving to this day.
Yeah.
Because if it just kept being, you know, churned out, lone man walks into a town, shoots a guy, like like most of them were, I don't think it would still be around. It would just be remembered as, oh, westerns, they were daft, weren't they? Like, like it still wouldn't be respected as a genre.
Mm-hmm.
And Eastwood, he like really leads that in like being introspective and like looking at his character's psyche, because it is really just one character.
Yeah.
Unless they're like, because most of the time, sometimes you don't even have a name, you know?
Well, he is like in the Dolls trilogy. Is he the same character in them?
Different guy.
I think meant to be a different guy, but he's basically got the same name. He's usually either called the Man with No Name or Blondie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Even though he's not blonde.
Yeah, for a few Dolls more, I think he's got a different name as well, but they don't really mention it at all. It's just not really relevant. Who he is, no one really cares about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's quite cool, actually.
About the Dolls trilogy, spaghetti westerns, what do we think of them?
We have just talked about that for like 10 minutes, Reese.
Well, Dolls trilogy in particular, and we'll get into that. Get into the depth of that. Which is the best out of the three?
Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
If only for the graveyard shootout.
Love that. Yeah. It manages to make a three-hour film be interesting and varied and fun, and just having a good like core trio of characters.
Yeah.
Is what keeps that film together, I think, through all the trials and tribulations, and obviously the effects and the big Civil War battle scene we see. That's just so cool. You as the audience, you've got to pick a side as well, because all three are presented as protagonists in some way. I think Lee Van Cleef's character the least so, but you still you still want pick your favorites and want them to win the shootout at the end. Obviously, you know Clint Eastwood's going to win in some way, but. That's what fun. You're like on this ride with the characters instead. I think the weakest out of them is Fistful of Dollars.
Right,
just because it's the least stylized.
I've seen that one. I've seen Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, but I didn't get around to watching a few Dollars
more. Oh, I really think you should.
I suppose it's Fistful of Dollars was the first one. I was wrong before. Once Upon a Time in the West was after the Dollars trilogy. But for Fistful of Dollars, it was the first like one that he'd done. So.
Yeah.
I guess you see the style develop as the films go on until you get to The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which is like him at the height of his power.
Yeah, that's what was fun about this, watching like For a Few Dollars More, because that's the in-betweeny phase.
Yeah.
The style's really, really there. There's this really stupid shot of Lee Van Cleef like looking at a safe or something, and it just keeps like shot, reverse shot on his eyes, and it goes every single cut. And it really adds that element of style. And obviously, like the gunplay in that, I think is the best out of the trilogy, because in a lot of westerns they do get a bit lazy and just like have a guy shooting and then another guy fall over. But in that film, the gunplay and like how skilled these people are at shooting is really, really emphasized. Like there's a really good bit, and this is again about Leone's like style and how like exaggerated it is, where Clint Eastwood and Lee Van Cleef, they're both bounty hunters after the same guy.
Yeah.
And they're walking at the same town, and Clint Eastwood, to show off and like kind of scare Lee Van Cleef away, he shoots his hat off. Right? Lee Van Cleef goes to pick it up, shoots it away again. keeps doing that, further and further away, until eventually he misses. Right?
Oh,
and Lee Van Cleef, this whole time you realise he's been psyching out Clint Eastwood's aim, seeing how far away he has to stand where he can shoot Clint Eastwood, but Clint Eastwood can't shoot him.
That's really cool.
And it's really cool. And he gets out this revolver, he equips a stock on the back of it, and he aims at Clint Eastwood, blows his hat off his head into the air, and then juggles it with his bullets in the air and lets it land. It's so daft. So cool. And like a million people just like shoot each other's cigars out of their mouths and that, and like such aim that you just would not be able to have as in like a normal human. It just like they're like superhuman.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
Did you just call him the original aura farmer?
Yeah.
Cause
he really was.
Because there's a line in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly that stuck with me. It's when he's someone's just being like interrogated and like battered, and he turns to Clint Eastwood, and Clint Eastwood goes, "Are you going to do the same to me?" Mm-hmm. And he goes, "Would you talk?" And he goes, "I thought he wouldn't." I think that he got some really cool lines in that film as well.
Yeah, that's what the Furious Mo is a lot of the time. It's a lot of them like psyching each other out. There's
now.
A bit where another bit where Lee Van Cleef like lights a match on another guy's shoulder and then lights his pipe with it, and he's just like psyching out, going, "Go on, you know where you want to shoot it, you know I'm going to beat you." It's so fun. That like I think that's the peak of the stylish Western.
Yeah.
As opposed to like the more realist ones we see from a lot of like other directors and other like stars, and I think that's as far as it can get before we get into like ludicrous levels of like disbelief where you might as well like set in space, you know.
Now you've got High Plains Drifter, which is another Eastwood one where like he's basically like a spirit who's come back from the dead for revenge. So
cool. Yeah.
So that's sort of you're going on to the a bit like. Treading into the realm of fantasy. I don't think they're like actually say that he's a spirit, but by the end he just fades off into the distance, and he's supposed to have been this person who's come back from the dead to avenge like his death. Like he paints the whole town red, and literally he paints the town red to lure everyone in. So that was pretty cool.
And there's that mad scene in it where he's whipping all the bad guys, but it's also like you can't see where he's from, so it's like just like the whip just flies out of the shadows and it's like teleporting all over the town.
Oh, that sounds really cool.
It's
pretty good.
Oh, that's cool.
I do like it when Westerns do embrace the more like fantastical elements of them. We don't see that very often. Obviously, there's like sci-fi Westerns that happen, but they're just like, you know, same thing, different setting, you know? Yeah. Like you replace a regular revolver with a laser revolver. It doesn't really make a difference, you know?
Yeah.
But it's such a good setting to play around with because it's so formulaic. The amount of like things you can do to interrupt that formula and change it really make it like endure, I think. Because you can have like ghosts and monsters and zombies and whatever. Like Red Dead Redemption did a whole DLC based on what if Western but zombies, and it works quite well.
Yeah.
Sean Connery did a great sci-fi Western, Outland.
Outland,
which is pretty underrated, I'd say.
Sean Connery Western sounds quite fun.
I'll put it on the list.
Oh, he's so good as the sheriff.
He sounded like he'd be a rage reader as well.
Finally, we're going to make our way to the modern Western from the 1990s until today. What do you all think of the way that the genre has reinvented itself for a modern audience?
Yeah, we've kind of been alluding to it before we went back onto the spaghetti ones again, but I think Unforgiven is like the jumping off point for the modern Western, and that, like, the success of that's kind of shaped directors and filmmakers' need to constantly have some sort of twist or reinvention of what you would expect from it. So like Tombstone, we've mentioned that before, that's a classic Western story, the gunfight at the OK Corral, but it's a lot more gritty, it's a lot more like they make Wyatt Earp a lot more morally grey. Doc Holliday, they like address tuberculosis and illness, and it's a lot more edgy. The Quick and the Dead, that's also quite edgy.
That's Sam Raimi.
Yeah, that's Sam Raimi in a Western peak. but it's got quite a feminist angle to it as well. And the same goes for the remake of True Grit. That's because you're following. No, even though the Oscars nominated her for Best Supporting Actress, you're following Hailee Steinfeld through the whole thing. It's just like Rooster Cogburn and Matt Damon's character. They're just there to support her, and like she manages to out-act them like completely, and she's only 13 years old and it's her first film.
That's
it's
what
crazy.
I felt like in the original one as well, because it's like that's what blew my mind about, because in Westerns it's a very male-centric genre. I'd say it's like women are either prostitutes, wives who do nothing and then die off screen, or just not in it at all, right? In Few Does More there's four women, only one of them speaks. Brilliant. And that's the comment on how hot Clint Eastwood is. Like you get what I mean, like they don't really have any agency at all in it. And that's what really struck us about True Grit, how much the main girl carries the film, like the momentum of the film narratively. And it made it really fun, and that like, I think that was an early bit of introspection from them, but that certainly does like expand in the 90s and the later ones.
That's why I like Quick and the Dead so much, because it's unusual to have a female lead in a Western, but you've got Sharon Stone in that, like it's just really good. It's a proper stacked cast. Sharon Stone, Gene Hackman, Russell Crowe, Leonardo DiCaprio when he's very young.
Oh, right.
And who am I? there's a couple others that I'm missing, but there's just loads, and it's a great premise. It's like it's a battle royale basically, but for westerns. They're going to this town, and there's like a competition every day. There's a different duel, and like people are being put up against each other. And she's rolled into town to get revenge for her husband, and she's got to work her way up the duels and survive them to get to Gene Hackman, who's the sheriff of the town, but he's corrupt.
So you're not Unforgiven as well.
He is. He's an
Unforgiven.
Oh my god.
I've seen half of Unforgiven, my granddad's favourite film, and then halfway through he turned it off. And I was like, what are you doing? He was like, oh, I'm going to put on Holmes Under the Hammer.
That's my memory of Unforgiven. That's what dads and granddads are like. They'll be like, oh, go on, stick on this film. I'm going to like faff about in the kitchen for 20 minutes while it starts and then ask you what's going on.
Yeah.
Like,
I know, but that is one of Hackman's best performances. We've talked about it on the Gene Hackman episode, but like, he's such a versatile actor.
He really is. Yeah.
Even though, like, when you look at it from like overall, he's sort of playing the same regular Joe in most of it, but like
he does it really well.
Yeah, he does it really well.
That's what I think. You know, if he did it the same way and didn't put everything into it, then I'd be like, oh, okay, fair enough. But he puts in like, I don't know. I think he's great.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna get too much into Gene Hackman, but I would like to see him in more westerns.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta go and like find some lost film that he's done, and some secret western.
Tombstone 2.
Another one, like I mentioned before, that I would consider a western is No Country for Old Men.
Yeah,
that's definitely. That is like a proper reinvention of a western.
Yeah, I would say so. Even the bit that like reminds me of a western the most is, do you know when what's he called Llewellyn Moss, when he's like hiding from him on the streets.
It's like a proper shootout.
Yeah. It's still set in the West, and people say like the Western's a genre defined by its setting, like you can call anything the Western as long as it's set in the West.
Yeah.
I don't really know if I agree with that. It's got to have like certain tropes to
it. It's got to have certain tropes, otherwise you could brand anything a Western.
Yeah, but that really does it. It has the reinvention, like you say. Arnold Sugar is terrifying. Yeah. You can't not address him in the film.
Andon feels like a spiritual successor to Lee Van Cleef's sort of character.
Yes. Yes, he does. Yes, you're right. What's he called? Oh, Angel Eyes in, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Yeah, like just this really scary guy who comes in and like threatens everyone. Like that's his like bit. Like, but he takes it to such a good another level because he's so scary and like
it
delves a bit more into like the psyche of it as well, which I really like.
I think my biggest draw from No Country for Old Men was the bits with Tommy Lee Jones, because I thought he was really underrated in it.
Oh, yeah.
And his final lines before the film ends, I thought really resonated, because it was like, it was a proper, like, casting aside of the old Western, because he's an old man and he's not equipped for the violence of the new world, which I took as like a commentary on how different a modern Western is compared to the classics, how much more violent and gritty they are, and how there's not really a place in the world anymore for that classic style of Western, which is what Tommy Lee Jones was as the sheriff trying to enforce good, but ultimately he can't because Josh Brolin, spoilers, dies, and Andon like, gets away.
It's in such a casual way as well. You don't even see it.
I know. Uh-huh. He's just
I thought I missed something.
He's just walking past the pool and then cuts to the next scene and he's dead.
It's done so well.
And he just gets killed by random gangsters.
It's not even Anton.
Yeah, it's not even Anton after all that. It's really effective.
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah.
Yeah, I remember when my mum and dad went to see that film when I was a kid, they left me at home and I asked them like what film they were going to see, and like, oh, it sounds interesting, right? And then to come back, and I come back home the next day after being at granddad's overnight, and I'm like, oh, how was the film? They go, that ending was terrible. They hated that ending. But I think it works.
I can see it being polarising. I think it really works. But I can see, like, if you've been watching this for however long the film is, and you could take that as a bit of an anticlimax, but I think it's, like, a really good commentary on the Western as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the same. Not really the same, but with, like, Django Unchained, that plays a lot with the classic tropes of the Western, but I feel like that's much more of an embracing of what a Western is rather than No Country for Old Men being a rejection of what an old Western is.
Mm-hmm. That is, it's on the more, like, stylish end as well, like a spaghetti Western instead of, like, the more realistic ones, whereas the No Country for Men, like, handles that quite well.
Mm-hmm.
I just love it. It's a brilliant film.
I think that that's just Tarantino down to a T, though, because, like, in the way that the Coens, like, reject the old thing, his whole filmography is built around the films that he likes. Mm-hmm. So yeah. He likes westerns. He makes a love letter to the westerns. He loves sort of classic pulpy crime movies. He makes Pulp Fiction. He loves like Japanese samurai films. He makes Kill Bill.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I say, that comes through really strongly in Django Unchained. Yeah. I haven't seen the original, but I do really like the new one.
Django, the original, oh, it's good. It's good. I wouldn't say it's as good as Django Unchained, but it's got an amazing theme song that plays. And the main guy literally, like, walks around slinging his own coffin over his back.
Oh, that's cool.
It's that like, is, it's yeah. such a good, like... It's such a good, like, character thing. Like, it's, like, a recognisable silhouette, and it's also yeah. a good, like, thing for his character. Yeah. But, spoilers, the coffin has a machine gun inside it.
Oh.
And he whips that out. It's the muddiest film I've ever seen. The whole, like, town that he walks into is, like, covered in mud. There's a scene where he gets the machine gun and shoots, like, 50 guys with him, and everyone's, like, covered in mud by the end of it. And it's got one of the best, like, final shootouts I've seen in a in a Western ever. It's so amazing. Give it a watch. It's quite underrated, I think.
I think as well, for a modern reinvention, we mentioned Django. How about Rango?
Rango is one of the best animated films I've ever seen.
Yeah,
yeah, that's it.
And as someone who hates Johnny Depp, I love Rango.
Yeah, Rango's pretty good. It's
phenomenal.
It's a kid's western. It's mm-hmm. really cool. It's something that you wouldn't expect, because the genre doesn't really have much of a crossover with, like, children or family entertainment, but that works quite well.
Yeah, it's a talking animal film, which you'd expect to be like Secret Life of Pets or something.
And
like
then
that.
He becomes like, does not become the sheriff.
He becomes the sheriff of this town. I think it's a really good like look at main Western characters, because he just isn't one. Like, and he's trying to fill that role. But then obviously, like, it's a kid. It's mainly a kid's film, so it's got to have some sort of message. And I think the message is that, like, you don't have to be like, well, to A, do what's right. B, not every hero's the same. That's the message that it gives you. And it's just like, from a like design and style point.
Oh, it's a beautiful film.
It is a brilliant film. It's got a rattlesnake with a machine gun for a tail.
Yeah.
You can't beat that. Clint Eastwood isn't actually in it, by the way.
Yeah, but he's not.
Someone,
the spirit of the West.
I'm sure it's Obi-Wan Kenobi's voice actor or something like that out of Clone Wars.
I don't think it was. It was designed and like made to look like Clint Eastwood, but it was someone else who played him.
Yeah, it's obviously meant to be him.
I looked it up and I had like a Mandela effect.
So he's called
the Spirit of the West.
Spirit of the West. Mm-hmm. Timothy Oliphant.
Oh, Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah. I thought it was him. I was going to say
I was close. It's another Sky who's in Star Wars.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think like the Spirit of the West quite sums Westerns up like as they are now quite well, because it's sort of like the spirit of it's carried on, but it's changed so much from what it originally was, and it doesn't, as much as people like reject it or say, oh, the Westerns have passed us by, they haven't really, because they're still being made and they're still doing quite well. Like Netflix had The Power of the Dog a couple of years ago with Benedict Cumberbatch, and that got a lot of award buzz. Pedro Almodovar came out with A Strange Way of Life, which is Pedro Pascal and Ethan Hawke, and it's like it's got a gay romance, and that's like very unheard of for a Western. It's people tend to put Westerns in a box and say, oh yeah, this is what a Western is, this is how you act. But it's a really, like you were sort of saying before with like the Undead Nightmare from Red Dead, it's a proper versatile genre.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's cowboys and it's the Wild West, but there's so much that you can do with that. The possibilities really are kind of endless.
It's only, a Western is what you make it, I think.
Yeah.
If you only watch the very, very classic formulaic ones, then you're not going to get anything else out of it. But if you think deeper, if you look deeper at the ones that are more introspective, more fun, more out there, then you will get more out of the genre, I think. Because it's such a classic. It feels like a fairy tale almost, in how classic the formula is. You have like a very outwardly heroic character and a very easy like villain.
Well, that's what it is. It's American mythology.
Exactly.
In the same way that like Hercules or the, like Homer's Odyssey and all that. It's like Greek mythology. All the stories of Rome. This is the American mythology, the Wild West.
It is. It's like the creation myth, I think. It's good at that, and the introspection like gets into that as well, because we see a lot more of like, we see a lot more diverse culture in new westerns as well. We see a lot more Asian people, we see a lot more Black people, Native Americans, like the people who were there, who did help construct the West and were like players in the game.
Yeah.
But were just kind of overlooked because of, well, the films really rewrote history, I think. History's written by the victors, and the Americans certainly were the victors in that situation.
Yeah.
Like, but I really like just how diverse of a set in the Western can be, because in Tombstone as well, there is a Chinese opium den, and that's like diversity in the setting, even though it's in a negative way.
Yeah,
it's still there.
I think a couple of others, like when you've mentioned diversity, to come back to us, a couple of others that I would like consider westerns, even if that like most people other people wouldn't. Sinners this year felt very western. It's like it's past that era, but just because it's the American South, and you've got the Native American bounty hunters who come after the vampires and so on. I thought that had a lot of western spirit to it, and the same with Prey, which came out a few years ago, the Predator film, that was really cool because it had a Native American lead and it proper utilized the environment well, which a Western Predator is always something that I've wanted, and like the whole time period thing was really cool. But we'll get more into that, I think, in the Predator episode. But that was a really cool reinvention of the Western, and I think that's like a good sort of end point that. The Western will always live on as people's interpretations of it, like you were saying before. It's what you make of it.
I think that's all the gunfights and cowboys we've got time for today. Make sure to check out our Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook pages for more Cine Club podcast content and updates.
As always, this episode was recorded and produced by us, the Sunderland University students, as well as being engineered and edited by Emily Main. A special thanks goes out to Steve Cannon, Barbara Sadler, and Richard Berry. A reminder that our four outlaws this week have consisted of me, Billy,
me, Ben,
me, Matthew,
and me, Reese. This has been a Cine Club production for Spark. Thanks for listening.